Good evening, planet Earth. Good evening, chill folk, on the traveling runway dream. Your fucked up scheme will come true. Good evening to the dancing nurses. You've been practicing your butt cake. You know how to twerk it. You're gonna work it for us. Because it is May the 21st, 2025, Bo Blimp Doc, it is still Bo Blimp Doc. That which is real is definitely fake. If you think it's fake, it could be fucking real. May the 21st, 2025. Yeah, and it's almost 10 p.m. Technically, it's 9:48 p.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, not far from the Vern Burton Center, where the Wanda Fuca Festival will be held this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You should come on down, take a look, walk around. Take off that nasty frown. Sunshine beam days. Blue sky warbling. The deer. The chicken. The bird is coming, baby. It's a springtime flower day. And you can come on down to the Vern Burton Center. Saturday, Sunday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Am I correct? Yes. And how do I know this? Well, because I'm going to be working there this weekend. So if you've ever said to yourself, I live on the Olympic Peninsula, and I listen to Dan's podcast, which the odds of that are probably one in, I don't know, two or three bablillion. But if you're that special person, I don't care if you're a fucking fed, come on down to the Vern Burton Center and meet your Uncle Zed. I'll teach you the lessons. I'll take you down to the wharf. And we'll meet the poison queen. And we'll meet your witch's dream. And then we'll fall in love with the hookers who sell cocaine. So, I decided to remind my listeners of a few things, kind of related to the theme of the last couple weeks. And I do this every once in a while, because some of you may have been listening to me for the last 10 fucking years, but there's a pretty good fucking chance that some of you ain't. This podcast goes to some really dark places, and since 2020, I think that we've reached the bottom of the barrel. All of us think we can keep up with the crazy, but can we? And one of the reasons why I try to do this is to diffuse things, to sort of pull these bugbears, these demons, these fear monsters or trauma monkeys, pull them into the sunlight, which destroys them, and hopefully a lot of that fear goes away. But the simple truth is sometimes I think I know. And I feel that wrathfulness in my heart. And I go to some pretty bad places. And as a Christian, if you're a Christian, and it's okay if you're not. I'm not here to, these days, I'm definitely not an evangelist at this moment, which I should be, but I'm not at this moment. But if you're a Christian, you probably wince at a lot of this stuff. But since 2020, it's been a lot worse. And in the last few months, it's been worse than that. If you feel as if this is too much for you, you don't have to listen. I don't really know how many real people do listen, but if you say to yourself, Dan, you're a broken record, you haven't had anything to contribute since 2020, you're not really helping me with the stock market or the Bitcoin, I'm not going to land my new job or figure out how to go to high fashion, I can't cook a proper pizza or stew because of you, and you turn me blue, Dan, you take me down the hole. Right down the hole. But my situation vis-a-vis God is mine. If you're a Christian, your situation vis-a-vis God is yours. It is a personal relationship. I know that there are people who try to teach it as kind of a commie thing, but it really isn't. And so I'll deal with what I have to deal with and manage my relationship with Christ on my own terms. And if that means that right now I'm a poor disciple, well, I'm pretty certain along the way he picked up a few of those. Anyways, I don't want to dwell on this. You can think on it yourself, you know. Next topic. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Christians know more about the Holocaust than they know about Christ. Most of the Christians I know more about the Holocaust. Most of the Christians I know more about Greater Israel. Most of the Christians I know more about Theodore Herzl than they know about Jesus. So there was a quote from, I think, Charles Spurgeon. And it was posted on social media. You don't need to know which one. I got a couple burner accounts. I do some crazy stuff. But it could have been Facebook. It could have been Twitter. It could have been Truth Social or Blue Sky or any of the other digital ghettos. But it was about a quote from Spurgeon about Jewish people. And the person putting up the quote ostensibly wanted to prove, ergo, if you're a good Christian, you have to support the state of Israel. The problem is, and again, this is context, but context is important, is that Charles Spurgeon died in 1892. And so that's a little bit like 50 years plus before the state of Israel. That's way more than 50 years before the state of Israel decided to build nuclear weapons, before all the wars, frankly, before Gaza and the West Bank. I think if Charles Spurgeon is a good Christian and he were alive today, he would say, yes, the children of Jacob, the remnant, you should not attack them. That is not your role. But whatever this freak show is in Israel, it's got to go. If he was a good Christian, I'm pretty certain that would be his position. And he would be called anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish, because he thinks dropping 10,000 tons plus of TNT per square mile is retarded, but, you know, evil. And did I tell you kind of fucking retarded? And maybe it's an exaggeration to say most Christians know more about the Holocaust than they know about Jesus or the Bible. But folks, that's not a big stretch. Like, I would love to do this study. I would like to do a study where I quiz people about the Bible and Christ, and I quiz people about the Holocaust. And I would not be surprised, no matter what the cohort, Jewish people, obviously, Christians, Buddhists, you name it, even atheists, and everybody would know way more about the Holocaust than anything else. I'd even put it up against all the other religions. And people would know. Like, take random questions from Islam, Buddhism, Christianity, Zen, I don't care, agnosticism, atheism. And if you did that query, still, I say, people would know way more about the Holocaust. If you asked them general questions about other times in human history, when a government wiped a shitload of people out, they would still know more about the Holocaust. Now, if you want to say it's because it was the worst thing ever, I don't know that that could possibly be fucking true. But what I found interesting was this quote. It's from an account at Ozraeli Avi Yemini. If you know this account on Twitter, it's Ozraeli Avi. And he's talking about all the starved babies in Gaza or the West Bank, and he's asking for a list of names. And implied in this post is something interesting, and it really does go to the core of Zionism versus Judaism. Because according to a Zionist, nobody's life has as much value as an Israeli life. And if it's an undocumented life, if the life has no name, no record, no license, if the life is a nameless hobo on the street, then these are total garbage, and we can just throw them away. According to this poster, if a child doesn't have an official, I don't know, hospital certificate, it's not a real child or baby. So hey, you can murder it, you can certainly do other things to it, huh, Jew tunnel, and you can probably end up sacrificing it. And because it's not just not Jewish, but it's not documented, it doesn't have any paperwork, then you can just throw it away. That's what this social media post, I took a screenshot, is actually saying. They're not saying it, they're leaving kind of the silent part out. But clearly, if there is no documentation for the people of the West Bank and Gaza, then according to this person, those lives have zero value. And if this is a position that a Christian could ever take, like if a Christian could read a post like this and say to themselves, oh yeah, you know, give me the names of all the dead babies, because if they don't have any official documents that I can look up, that means they don't exist. If that is an official position of a Christian at this point, add that to reasons why my feelings right now vis-a-vis God and everything else, they're not so great. And the good news for me is it's really not the Lord I'm angry with. It's his creations. It's these people. These people that, yes, they have free will, but they use it to do the worst fucking things imaginable. They have freedom, but they want to put each other in prisons. They have minds to think, but all they really want to do all day is create problems they don't fucking need and cause harm to people they'll never ever fucking meet. And in their heads, they'll say to themselves, well, I don't know the names. There's no document. I can't look up that dead body in the database. Ergo, the person never existed. Ergo, it's okay to treat them like trash. And I am going to tell you, as somebody on shaky, very, very shaky ground with God, that is a very bad position to take. Does this mean that people don't lie in war? They lie all the time. Okay, one of the first, I think it's been said many times, that one of the first casualties of war is the truth. It really is the first thing that gets shot in the head. So do people lie on all sides? They absolutely do. But we're talking about the statement and what it implies. And what it implies is that if you cannot document the life of a human being, then that person never existed. And in so many ways, that is the decay at the heart of modernity. In so many ways, that points to the crack, where it ends up, especially when you factor in the quote-unquote secular side, the non-religious perspective, the world of technology and AI. We are reaching a point where people say, no, you're just a connectome. You're a meat sack. I can replace you. I can copy you. You're simply irrelevant. Folks, there's a dark place coming. Very, very soon. And they'll tell you there's not enough food. There's not enough water. They've already told you, because they buy up all the houses, there's not enough places to live. I mean, sure, you'll drive down a street in Dayton, Ohio, and you'll see a bunch of houses that are not really occupied, but rather squatted. But what they'll tell you is that those houses can't be bought, and they can't be made, you know, they can't be improved. That you have a choice between no place to live and simply squatting someplace. And then you think about the state of Israel. And you think about U.S. forces guarding oil in Syria. And you think about the situation for us. And you know what? On a certain level, if you look back far enough, a lot of America looks like a squatter nation. definitely a bad HOA. So no, I'm going to let you know a little secret if you're listening, all five or six of you. If you don't have a license, if you don't have a social security number, if you don't have your DNA in a database, if you choose not to be vaxxed, and even more interesting, like me, mostly choose to avoid the healthcare system, this doesn't make you garbage. Okay, this doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't necessarily make you a good person, but it definitely doesn't make you garbage. And just because nobody can check your name in a database, that doesn't mean your life has no value. If no one else can say that today, I can say it. Next topic. Dan, are you saying... No, I don't think all Jewish people think this way. But Zionism is filled with this. And if you were to prove to me that all Jewish people are Zionists, then maybe you'd be right. I'm just not ready to go there yet. What I can tell you is Zionism absolutely is a cult of suffering. It took me about 50 fucking years to get here. But it's a cult of suffering. And the only thing it does is reify suffering. It takes previous pain and creates new pain over and over again. And that type of death, Ouroboros, only ends one way. And that's total destruction. It's never been different. Or there is no God. That would be the case, folks. If you think that God has an issue with destroying the governments of Israel, once again, read 1 Samuel 8, and once again, look at all the fucking times in the Old and New Testament that the Lord basically lets the government of Israel get wiped out, knocked out, destroyed, dismantled, blown to pieces. He even sends his own prophets to teach him a lesson. So yeah, I would have to say that you can believe the remnant is protected, but there's none of this government garbage in any country on earth that is protected by God. None of it. If some king or queen says they have a divine right to rule because some crooked pope that had sex with altar boys told them so, guess what? I'm telling you that's bullshit. That's a grift. There's no such thing. That's the easy one, because if you think the word king is ambiguous with respect to the word sovereignty, there's nothing ambiguous about kings and queens. The Lord is absolutely clear about them, 100%. And I don't think Jesus said anywhere in the New Testament, well, you better have a king, you better have a queen, you better have an emperor and a pope. I don't think he said any of that crap. Next topic. Dan, you're terrible. Yeah, I don't care. This article comes from The Guardian, and it was published, let me just double check the date on this, because sometimes these articles show up and the dates just don't pop out. Wow, this is one of those. This was published on May the 15th, and it shows Guardian staff and agencies, so it's not really attributing to one author. At least I'm not seeing I'm not seeing one. So anyways, it's being attributed to Guardian staff and agencies. Headline, and again, this is published on May the 15th, 2025. Headline, United Health Group shares plunge after report of Medicare fraud inquiry. Shares in the United Health Group tumbled after it was reported that the largest health insurer in the U.S. is under investigation over possible criminal Medicare fraud. The U.S. Department of Justice has been investigating the health insurance giant since last summer, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing unnamed people familiar with the matter. United Health shares dropped 16.5% during early trading in New York on Thursday, deepening a stark market rout, a stock market rout, although the word stark is there. Maybe they meant both. Its stock value has halved since the turn of the year. Earlier this week, the vast healthcare firm announced its CEO, Andrew Witty, was, you can't make up these names, was stepping down for personal reasons as it suspended its full-year financial outlook due to higher-than-expected medical costs. It has been a punishing period for United Health starting in December when its executive, Brian Thompson, was targeted and killed outside a New York City hotel. While Medicare is a U.S. government-run health insurance program for older and disabled people, Medicare Advantage is a program under which private health insurers contract with the Medicare program to provide health benefits. UnitedHealth said, "We have not been notified by the Department of Justice of the supposed criminal investigation reported without official attribution in the Wall Street Journal today. We stand by the integrity of our Medicare Advantage program," the firm added. The Justice Department did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Earlier this year, the Journal reported that a civil fraud investigation had been launched into UnitedHealth's Medicare practices, while the U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley launched an inquiry into the company's billing methods, demanding detailed compliance records. For decades, the company has flourished by leveraging its dominance in insurance and growth in the Medicare market, the U.S. government program that covers medical costs for elderly people. There you go. Okay. There's also newer information related to the story about policies related to, and I don't know how to put this, but to avoiding hospital transfers. Like, let's say Grandma Fussy Gus is at the old people's home, and, you know, UnitedHealth insures her, but also manages the home through that Advantage program, blah, blah, blah. And she has some heart issues. According to the stories I've read, UnitedHealth had policies that went to the facilities themselves saying, you know, if you can take care of this locally, take care of it locally. Don't transfer. Try to save money. Even to the point of ignoring requests that were basically don't DNR me. Basically, there are cases of people saying, I do not authorize DNR or do not resuscitate orders. But instead, UnitedHealth said, no, enforce DNR even if the patient doesn't want it. That basically means that if an old person's heart stops beating, for example, and they have a DNR, a formal DNR, or they stop breathing, both, no one's supposed to intervene. No one's supposed to intubate them, to pump air in. No one's supposed to put them on the heart-lung machine. You're not supposed to do anything. You're simply supposed to let them die. If they stop eating, you don't force food. That is what it, well, it doesn't really apply there. But it does apply to the stop breathing, heart stop beating, do not resuscitate DNR. Yeah, I think the food thing is different. But the point is, it means that don't revive me. If my heart stops beating, if I can't breathe, don't revive me. So basically, UnitedHealth was saying, just don't revive them. And if that's the case, that would be outright murder. It would be. It's not to say that it's the same as going down the street with a gun and shooting a person. It's not exactly like that. But if they actually did issue orders, and this is in other articles you have to look at, but if they actually did have policy and they find policy statements to this effect, then this would be a big deal. Another thing too, after Enron, they created something called Sarbanes-Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley, Sarbanes-Oxley. Well, and it applies to U.S. corporations, and in reality, I don't think it's done much to help anybody. I think it's turned out to be a giant turd that was put out there after Enron to just make people feel better. But in theory, if you're Sarbanes-Oxley compliant, all the emails and policy statements should be stored someplace as a digital record. You should be able to find it. If you can't find it, then you're out of compliance. That's one of the features of Sarbanes-Oxley. And there's other things related to Medicare as far as regulations and requirements that go deeper than that. So UnitedHealth, as a company, could be destroyed by this. Like, if there's actual policy statements that say, if Grandma Fuzzy Gus stops breathing, don't intubate her, don't help her. If her heart stops beating, just turn off the monitor. And you know, after 10 or 15 minutes, bring in the physician's assistant, probably not a doctor, and they'll declare time of death, TOD, and then you call the family, and they stand by, you hand them the box, and then they cry, here's the ashes, here's the bag, here's a picture of all the little grandchildren, and it's so happy, but you know, we killed your grandma. mean, they don't say it like that. They don't say we killed your grandma. But if there's an email, if there's a policy statement, and if it goes up far enough, because this, okay, I am an anarchist. I hate the government, but I love to see the government feeding on itself. And in some sense, this is almost an example of that. Autophagy, I don't know what you'd call it. But the point is, this is kind of like, you know, monsters attacking monsters, and I can only cheer for both sides up to a certain point. This would be more than just a case of violation of certain requirements. This could be RICO. This could be conspiratorial. If it goes up high enough and it's a policy, it means that United Health probably is stacked up at least a few hundred, if not a few thousand cases of people that they murdered. And I'm sorry, folks, if you have a formal statement from a patient that says, I want to be resuscitated, you have to obey it, just like you have to obey a DNR. And that means if their heart stops beating, I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but I'm doing it on purpose. If their heart stops beating, if they stop breathing, and they do not have a DNR, it is your job to revive them, okay? If you tell people who could revive them to not do it, that is murder. I worked in revenue cycle about 20 years ago. I worked in a lot of healthcare over a period of about a decade. You could say that of the time I've spent as a software engineer, just about half of it has been in the healthcare space. Most of that billing, you know, HICVAs, you know, UB-92s. I don't know what the current nomenclature is on a hospital bill. But one of the things I did is I repriced bills. I built a calculation engine so that you could figure out what the price is and then figure out if the insurance company is screwing the provider. And this is something both sides do. I've talked about this on my podcast before. It's a lot like the prisoner's dilemma when it comes to payers and providers. It should not be that way, but it is that way. And because it is that way, you end up with a lot of garbage bills, and companies that I've worked for will step in there on the payer side or the provider side and do what you would call strategic and systematic collections so that you're not like literally having one person checking every bill manually. So one aspect of this is you have to recalculate. So this is something I've done. I'm familiar with Medicare pricing. I'm familiar with all the rules. They're crazy. And you do have to sift through it and understand it to use it. It's not just about mathematics. It really is about the core strangeness of the government managing healthcare. I mean, the idea that you can define every possible procedure or that you ever should, because I think doctors are also a lot like artists, and the great ones have been. And if you put them in the box of, well, what's the procedure code? What was your diagnosis code? You know, and again, the Medicare government people would say, well, you have to do it this way, Dan, because otherwise doctors will do crazy shit. And I don't know how to break this to you, government person, but doctors are still doing crazy shit, and it's under the color of law, which means that they do the crazy shit still, but you guys make it look legal. And the reason why United Health can get away with this crazy shit like what they've done is because people believe the system works. They really do. Well, Dan, there's Medicare, and there's the government, and there's cops and prisons. All that is true. And your mom or your dad could get checked into a long-term care facility, and they could still get killed. And it wouldn't matter how many lawyers or cops or prisons there are. That's also true. It takes a while for people to get there, though. So this story, if there's time left in the game, could get big. But I'm kind of the opinion that there's probably thousands of cases related to 2020 in hospital systems stacking up right now, because time does run out. I figure there's thousands of cases that are stacking up. Probably some of them are really just class actions at this point, and I don't know that any of that will be sorted through. I don't think there's enough time left. It's like the story. This could be a huge story. And there's two things that help out United Health at this point. One is there's so much crazy noise right now, a lot of people don't give a fuck. And number two, there might not be enough time on the clock. So who knows? Nurse practitioners were pressured to push DNR orders even when patients had previously expressed a desire for life-saving treatments. To push do not resuscitate. Were pressured to push... Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to spend more time on this. It's a very depressing topic. You know, it's like people who think Doge found everything. Doge didn't find Microsoft Amalga. I think that's funny. I mean, Microsoft Amalga is a giant piece of government chunk vomit related to, you know, Obama's 2009 stimulus package and meaningful use. It's a giant chonk pocket. And yeah, they never found that. So there's a lot of garbage they didn't know shit about. And I'm okay with recognizing that's a simple truth. Next topic. Yeah, Doge. Doge's trying to help us, Dan, with butt cake. I know. So here's an article from The Independent. I don't know that I'm going to read the whole thing. It was published on May the 20th. And the headline is, How Achievable is Trump's Golden Dome Plan? And I am not seeing attribution here, but... Yeah, Katie Hawkinson. This was written by Katie Hawkinson. How Achievable is Trump's Golden Dome Plan? So if you don't know, I'm going to go down this list. In fact, I'm probably not going to read much of the article. I'm just going to give you a summary of the article. It describes the Golden Dome, and it describes some of the challenges presented. And what if I told you I read articles like this in the year 1985, pre-Boblimp Doc, but it was related to Star Wars, related to Ronnie Reagan and SDI. Strategic Defense Initiative. We were going to have particle beam weapons. We were going to have lasers in space. We were going to have smart missiles. Yeah, we were going to have rail guns, you name it. Ronnie Reagan was going to give us a giant dome over the United States to protect us from missiles. And the same arguments were had back then that are being had today. Like, can we do it? Is it too complex? How do you solve all these problems? I will tell you something. This article makes me think about the bridge that collapsed in Baltimore. This article makes me think about what happened in Maui, I think, with the runaway fire there and the Palisades. This article makes me think about Gaza, to tell you the truth, because even though that's not a natural disaster, I don't know who cleans that up and how long it takes, and I don't know if there's enough time. I don't think there's time to build this thing, but I do think it makes people feel as if everything's okay. I mean, the great thing about this from a propaganda perspective is it sort of pumps people up. You know, the bouncy castle's fine, Dan. If we can provide a golden shower over the bouncy castle, everyone will be safe. All we just have to do is go into the shower. A golden dome. It's hard to know at this point where the truth is. Back in the 1960s, there was something called the missile gap. And the CIA was telling the United States, you know, what it could tell us, you know, publicly. It couldn't tell us the secret stuff. But it was telling the public, vis-a-vis congressional hearings, that there was a missile gap. The Soviets got all kinds of missiles. We don't have enough of them missiles. If we're not careful, they're going to blow us up and make us communists. And it turned out to be 100% bullshit. It turned out that there was no missile gap, that a lot of the Soviet rockets were for shit. And what was as important, the control systems for managing Soviet missiles were even shittier. In fact, the biggest fear, once the truth was found out, wasn't that the Soviets would first strike us and destroy us. The biggest fear was that their system was so broken that that would lead to accidental nuclear war. And a couple times, it almost did. I mean, the United States had a couple false alarms, a couple false positives during the Cold War. But the Soviets racked up a lot. It's a good deal that they had the red phone, because the red phone was a way of checking, hey, did you guys just launch a bomb? No, we didn't. Calm down, click. So when the government comes out and says that China or Russia or somebody else is a demon, a bugbear, a boogeyman, and if we're not careful and build new weapons, we're going to be destroyed, it's something we need to consider, that there's a history of these people doing this, of scaring Americans and scaring them to the point of immiseration and poverty, because ultimately we all go into debt. It's not as simple as just the government's going into debt. The money becomes worthless, and what's just as bad, we direct a lot of energy and resources towards things that only create problems. They really don't solve them. Unless, of course, you believe the solution to all problems is to kill everybody. And brothers and sisters, I get it. A lot of people are at that point. I've seen it, I've heard it, and it's been this way for a while. I started noticing this nasty attitude on the part of all the fine people of nice places like Seattle 10 fucking years ago, 15 years ago. I noticed this with people a while back, and it's only gotten worse. The degree to which one person can objectify another and say to themselves, is there a document? Is there a record? How do I know? Well, then they're just trash. And in that worldview, building a golden dome makes sense because everybody else is trash. I don't know who they are. I don't care. If we set the world on fire, who gives a fuck? You see, here's the thing, folks. I don't think it's your job to worry about other people around the world, but I'm going to shock the fuck out of you. It's also not your job to fund an organization that drops bombs on them. Both things are not part of what your fucking job as a human being are. Your job is not to go around the world on a fucking white horse and save the day, and your job is also not to go around the world on a red horse and set fire to every city. That's not your job. We're supposed to be a free country. We're not supposed to be an empire. We were advised quite well to avoid being an empire, and this is exactly what we've become, and we've been here for a while. It's why we can joke about invading Canada, or joke about taking Greenland. I hate to break it to you, but shitty people speaking Latin, I don't know, roughly 2,200 years ago, had the same fucking attitude. And they sure got big fast, didn't they? I do not believe we can build a missile system that would be effective enough to justify this. I think that an enemy would quite literally just build tidal wave nukes, and it wouldn't matter. So if you say to yourself, well, we've got a perfect dome, and there's no way they can attack us, they will physically carry nukes in. They will figure out a way. And when it comes to nukes, one or two of them could probably disable this golden dome system. And then all of a sudden, there ain't no dome. So all you've really managed to do is scare your enemies into an arms race. So be careful, folks. If the CIA spook people tell you that we have great demons from beyond that are going to destroy us, so we got to spend a lot of money, just a couple things. Don't listen to that garbage. And remember, if I can dispel a demon, I will. That's a trauma monkey at this point, folks. This shit ain't ever getting built. It's not. It was never built in the 80s. I know that under Bush, they deployed a tiny missile system because I know about this. I was in the service. I was air defense. So I knew about these missile systems. Of course, they had a missile system in Alaska, but I'm not sure if that system's very effective. And if it's not just a single-shot system that protects against North Korea, it's certainly not something that protects against the Chinese or Russian or coordinated first strike. It probably doesn't. It probably takes out one or two missiles, gets destroyed, and then basically there's nothing left at all. So, yeah, I don't think this is a good idea. If you think it's a good idea, there's not enough time left. It's not going to get built. Damn, they're not going to build a magical golden dome. No. No, no, no. And it reminds me of a Rick and Morty episode. It really does. Like, oh, do you have a dome as big as every state? And it's like, oh, yeah, but you have to come home with me first, baby. So, yeah, it's a Rick and Morty episode. Next topic. So, I've got a couple t-shirts that feature Nancy Mace. I don't know if you're aware, but she confronted the public, you know. She went before Congress and she said, I'm going to show you some nude boob pics. And the internet sparked up like, holy crap. This is like Geraldo Rivera. This is like the fucking lost fucking vault of Al Capone. And that's exactly what it was. Because I stayed up to watch the live report of fucking Geraldo Rivera and the lost fucking whatever vault of Al Capone, and all that was in this vault was a bunch of fucking garbage. At least there could have been a dead body, or at least a plastic skeleton. Come on, Geraldo. I think this is exactly like that, because when she finally showed her boob pics, it was just blurry photos of gray ghost nonsense, of redigitized vomit. Not even nearly the quality of orbital NASA photos from the 60s, if you know, you know. So really just grainy, low quality. And so, you know, a lot of people were disappointed. Exactly like Geraldo Rivera and the Lost Vault of Al Capone. So I don't know. But it also got me thinking about a potentially biopic, you know, a biopic movie, a porn film, maybe soft porn, you know, Cinemax After Dark. The title of the film is Cockgressional Erection. Exactly, you know, like congressional election, but this is Cockgressional Erection. And it's starring, you know, whatever, Amanda Shuxley as Nancy Mace, Maria Dortovo as that Paulina Luna bitch, and Reese's DeGrasio as AOC. And it's a terrible story of three young women out there today fighting for what's right and wrong against the hard men of the swamp of Washington, D.C. And if you're wondering if there's going to be cheesecake of these women running through the swamp, scantily clad, the answer is any type of Cinemax movie after dark's going to have the cheesecake. Yeah, Cockgressional Erection. That could be the greatest movie of 2026. Along with the Time Panic of 2026, it'll all be rounded out. And maybe Bo Blimp Doc doesn't go to Grinkin' Time. Maybe it goes to Ho Blimp Doc. And Ho Blimp Doc starts in 2026. And maybe the biggest movie of Ho Blimp Doc will be Cockgressional Erection. So I've got some Nancy Mace pics, and you'll say to yourself, Dan, I can tell that's such low rent, copy paste, you know, Photoshop bullshit. Well, firstly, I can't afford Photoshop. I can afford something called GIMP because it's free. That's firstly. And secondly, I did not spend so much time on this at all that I have any issues with it being attacked, because I think I spent maybe 20, 30 minutes on this crap. It's terrible. And I was doing other things at the time. So there's no insult. You want to send me an email saying, that's just terrible, you're a son of a bitch, you can send me the nastiest shit you want to. All of this is part of me black box testing the box I live in. If you know, you know. And I'm sure there are people out there who understand what I'm saying. But Dan, you've got to respect Nancy Mace. I don't have to. Who said that? I respect people that fight for freedom. I don't think there's a person in Washington, D.C. that does that. I think you got grifters. I think you got con artists. I think you got a scheme that goes back to 1789. I really do. I think this country was free for about 5 years, and that's all we could give freedom. We've given the Federal Reserve more than 100 years, but we could only give freedom about 5 years. You all should think on these things, brothers and sisters. Because it's almost as if right from the get-go, this was all a big fuck job. All of it. For everybody. The people that were here first, the indigenous peoples, the peoples that were captured and bought and sold, the people that came later and built their HOAs everywhere. A giant fuck job called the United States of America. Yeah. I don't know. Some of you are angry at me, say, Dan, you're a son of a bitch. Why can't you be a patriot and simply accept that the state of Israel is our ally and that Iran is evil? I mean, I tally up all the naval ships and vessels that Iran has sunk. Oh, but Dan, what about those terrorists? I know, you can just blame every terrorist on Iran. But it's certainly the case that the state of Israel sunk a Navy ship. And they'll say, well, it was because we were retarded. Just like they'll say 10-7, it's because we're retarded. You guys got to understand, if you do support the state of Israel, you are supporting people who admittedly admit whatever, that their security operations are kind of fucking retarded. So, yeah. Necessary ally in the Middle East. Maybe more like dead weight. And if you say, well, no, they're not that retarded, then all of a sudden the paragliders and the USS Liberty in 67 and a bunch of other nonsense that goes back to the Stern gang, all of a sudden you realize these are grifters and gangsters, and they have nothing to do with Judaism. They have nothing to do with Christ or God. Whoever they worship, lowercase, you can take a guess. It isn't the Lord in heaven. It isn't Yahweh. It isn't Jesus. That, which one do you want? That they're really retarded and evil, or just evil? Well, maybe they are both, you know? I don't know. It is Wednesday, May the 21st, 2025, Beau Blimpdoc, but perhaps this time next year, I'll be married to my hooker wife, and we'll be in Ho Blimpdoc, and I'll have a hocaine job, living a hocaine lifestyle. Probably I'll own a flying car with a hobot inside. They won't call them robots. They'll call them hobots. They'll fly you around all over Funky Town. You'll disco all night long. You'll write a robot song. And then you'll be transported to outer space. And you'll be in the great donut in the sky. And at that place, the place of light and magic, you'll drink martinis with Elon Musky Gusk. And you'll plan your trip to Mars. And then to Uranus. And then deeper and deeper into the caverns of your soul. Have a great rest of your hump day, baby, and think about Nancy Mace and cheesecake picks, butt cake, and special Sofa King specials. Nancy Mace, Greasy, the new movie coming out next year with that Anna Paulina, Luna, whatever, and Nancy Mace called Cockgressional Erection.